Fantastic. Hey, welcome everyone. My name is Steve. And it's true, isn't it, that at some point in our lives, there's something that unites us, because at some point in our lives, all of us will have made a mess in some way or another. And so over this month, what we're going to be looking to do is, rather than trying to kind of sweep the mess under the carpet, in fact, what we want to be able to do is to bring it and kind of face it head on, and to see how is it that we can look to address the mess. If this is your first time, or if you've come back off the back of attending any of the services over Christmas, you are so welcome. Delighted to have you here. If you're a regular part of The Forge, it is great to see you. Happy New Year to you as well. And if you are watching online and you're joining us, I just want to say thank you for creating the time to join with us. We are so glad that you're doing so, and Happy New Year to you as well. I want to ask a question. How many of you get stressed by mess? In other words, I haven't even explained it. I mean, you're so, my goodness, there is enthusiasm there, isn't there? That's right. So it's, you know, when you start work, you have to clear up, you have to tidy up everything before you actually get on, because you can't work within a messy environment. Or if someone knocks on the door, they're not allowed in until you've vacked, you've put everything away, everything is kind of looking smart, and then they're allowed in. If that's you, just put your hands up enthusiastically now. Okay, everyone else, just have a look around, okay? Because you're looking at stressed people. Right, okay then. How many of you, though, honestly, you don't see the mess? You can just sit, there can be stuff all around, a bit like what you were just now seeing there, and honestly, it makes no difference to you. In fact, you probably cause half the mess anyway, that you can go to bed and all the dishes are not washed up and the kitchen is a mess, but that's fine because you can still sleep well. If that's you, put your hands up. That is why there are problems in the world. No. I saw this post. I just thought, oh, this was so true. This is so true. I saw this post on Facebook. It was just a little picture that came up. It said, look, it wouldn't be Christmas without Mum and her bin bag. I mean, that is just such a classic Christmas photo, really, don't you think? Yeah. Now, when we're talking about over this month, as we come to explore what the mess is and of how we can address the mess, a mess can be all kinds of experiences that we have in life. For some people, when thinking about a mess, we would think of a financial mess, because we impulse bought and now we find ourselves struggling in the new year, thinking, I have a Barclay card bill, I'm going to be in debt. And maybe you've got into financial mess because the addiction to online gambling or those online games, which have just kind of captured you, and it's put you in a mess. Or maybe it's not a financial mess, but it might be a relational mess, that either relationship that you've been in which is broken, or you've gone through what they call a messy divorce, and maybe it's the case that you haven't spoken to your children or members of the family for the last 5 years because of the mess within family life. It might be that it's a health mess, that you haven't looked after yourself, you haven't exercised, you have overfed, you have overdrunk, and you're suddenly starting to find that there are effects to our body that kind of abuse has caused. And we find ourselves not being the healthy person that we want to be. And it feels a bit of a mess. Or maybe it's a professional mess. Maybe work is all over the place, or you just keep jumping from job to job because you can't get on with the boss, you can't get on with your work colleagues, and it just feels like you're going round and round in circles. There's no stability. It just feels messy. Some of you might be sitting there thinking, nope, that's not me. And how great. You are welcome. You're annoying, but you're welcome. No, all it means is that you're in between messes, so just enjoy it. Honestly, that's what it is. Because you see, the thing that we all have in common, whether we have a faith or not, is that life is just messy. Sometimes it's messy because we've caused it. Sometimes it's messy because other people have caused it and we've been dragged into their mess. And sometimes mess happens because life happens that way. So I want to start with some good news today. Some good news. And the good news is this. There's always someone whose life is a bigger mess than yours. So I hope that makes you feel a lot better now. Okay, no, that's not the good news. No. It might make you feel a little bit better. But actually, take a look at this. It's not just you. There is something reassuring about the fact that if there's a mess in your life, it's not just you. Here's what we're talking about this month, okay? Mess brings us together. It does. And this is really important to know, that it's not just me, but it involves me, because it affects how we see other people's mess. When we see other people's poor decisions, you know, before we become critical, we need to remember that we can be a mess too. And when it comes to people's lives that are messy around us, we should be listeners. We should be curious. We should not be critics in those situations. Because when you hear the story behind people's messes, somehow you get to see them differently. A man called Stephen Covey, he wrote a book back, I think it was 1989. It became a world bestseller. It was called 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And within this book, which was such a bestseller, he tells a story. I just want to read it very quickly to you. This is what Stephen Covey said. He said, "I was riding a subway on Sunday morning in New York. People were sitting quietly, reading papers, or resting with eyes closed. It was a peaceful scene. And then a man and his children entered the subway car. The man sat next to me and closed his eyes, apparently oblivious to his children who were yelling, throwing things, and even grabbing people's papers. I couldn't believe he was so insensitive. Eventually, what felt like unusual patience, I turned and said, 'Sir, your children are disturbing people. I wonder if you couldn't control them a little more?' And the man lifted his gaze as if he saw the situation for the first time. 'Oh, you're right,' he said softly. 'I guess I should do something about it. Sorry, we've just come from the hospital where their mother died an hour ago, and I don't know what to think, and I guess they don't know how to handle it either.' He said, from that point, at that moment, everything changed. All of his frustration, all of his anger just melted just like that. Why? Because suddenly he understood the story behind the mess. He said, everything changed in an instant." So easy, isn't it, to make judgments and be critical of other people's mess, which is why it's important, actually, that we should always believe the best in others, especially when we don't know their story. And when we look at what Jesus has to say, Jesus picks up on this in his teaching, because it's something that we always find ourselves doing. We can look at a situation and say, "I can't believe, how stupid are they?" This is what Jesus said. He said, "Do not judge others, and you will not be judged. For you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged." In other words, he is saying, when you see a mess in someone else's life, don't judge, don't slag them off, don't be the critic, unless that's how you want other people to be viewing you in your mess. And then he goes on to say something which would have made everyone laugh. We won't laugh at this particularly, but people would have laughed when he said this. He says, "And why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? You see, we all have mess in our lives, and it's easy to highlight it in others. And we invest time in trying to hide our mess from others to make ourselves look respectable. So, this is how the Message version, which is a kind of another translation of the verses that I've just now read. I think this really captures the meaning of what Jesus was saying when he talked about not judging. This is what he says. He says, don't pick on people or jump on their failures or criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. That critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. It's easy to see a smudge on your neighbor's face and be oblivious to the ugly sneer on your own. So Jesus is warning us and saying, don't go around judging other people's messes, because you're a mess too, unless you want them to judge you. And another reason it's really important to recognize that not only do other people have a mess, but we have a mess too, is because sometimes we find a mess that is very hard to get out of by ourselves. And actually, we need others. It's a reminder that we need each other because, well, I guess we've all been in holes which have been so deep that we couldn't get out of ourselves. I remember, I've shared this before, many, many years ago, I remember first getting a Barclay card. A Barclay card is fab because you can just spend, and it's just wonderful until it comes to having to pay at the end of the month. And it had got to the point where I hadn't got enough money to pay at the end of the month. And so month after month, my Barclay card bill went higher and higher and higher until it got into four-figure numbers. And I honestly didn't know what to do. I was completely stuck, and every time the interest added to my kind of the debt on the card grew bigger and bigger. And so I wouldn't say anything to anyone because that's just embarrassing. And I remember a friend coming up. I hadn't seen him for quite a while. And a friend came up and said, how are you, Steve? And so we talked about family. And then he just asked a really direct question, which you don't normally ask a friend. And he just said, how are your finances, Steve? And he was like, oh, no. So I said, well, actually, they're not good at the moment. I'm really, really struggling. I've got this debt. And so I explained the situation. And actually, I didn't see that friend again for ages. But about a week later, a gift came through the post to clear my Barclay card bill. It was extraordinary, and it wasn't from my friend. In fact, I have no idea who it's from because they wanted to stay anonymous. But I was in a pit, I was in a hole that I did not know how to get out. And thank goodness, and I learned from it, for someone to be able to get me out of that mess. If you've ever had someone step into your life to do something that has helped you at a point where things are so messy you don't know how to sort it, you will know the power that that is. It's amazing. It's overwhelming. You feel so humble that someone is willing to help us out. Imagine if the reputation of the church was that. You know, that when anyone within a church had met or came across people whose life was a mess, that instead of pouring out judgment and saying, well, I'm sorry, you have to live in the mess of your decisions, that's just how life is, or making a judgment, and instead of that, being the people to come alongside and support. Honestly, it would change the reputation of the church in our country so much. So much. Now, there's something about the mess that Christians believe that I think is important. And it's this. Is the mess that brings us together because we are all in the same boat. We either have been a mess, we are a mess, or we're a decision away from becoming a mess. Okay, the mess that brings us together is the mess that brought God near. For God loved the messy people of the world so much that he sent his son into the world. You know, the good news of our faith, the Christian faith, is that God saw the mess that we were in and sent his son to help address the mess. That's why we've been celebrating over these last few weeks the Christmas story, the coming of Jesus. the coming of Jesus into the mess of our world. And sometimes I think it's really easy to be kind of viewing God as if God would have no idea how hard it is on life, because God is aloof, God is separate, God is out there, he's beyond us, and so that he cannot understand the tensions that you and I face and the mess that we get into. And yet Jesus coming, well, he was born into a mess. He was born into a stable. And for Jesus to be able to come into our world and to experience what you and I experience, God understands, God knows, God's been a part of the mess in this world. And he didn't shy away from the mess when Jesus was here, because he spent time with messy people, with women who decided the only way to go forward was to sell their bodies for sex. For people who would kind of turn their back on their own nation in order to be able to earn money through tax collection. All the people that the religious leaders thought were messy and dirty and needed to be avoided, Jesus spent time with. And it's why people didn't recognize who Jesus was when he came, especially the religious leaders, because if there's a God and if God was to come, what would God be like? He would look on this earth and he would say, well, what a mess you've made of it. And he would bring judgment. He would be Judge Rinder. He would be, well, maybe not Judge Rinder, but he would be the judge that would be condemning all of us for the mess that we've made of the world. So when Jesus enters the world, he doesn't come as judge. And he introduces a new word into the messiness of life, which is a life-giving word. It is an outstanding word. It's an unexpected word. He introduces this word. It's a word called grace. Nobody expected it, and most people missed it. So if your life, if you're here today, and when we just have to stop and reflect, as Helen got us to a little bit earlier, where are you at the moment? And you think my life is messy, and you're just trying to cover over that mess to look respectable here today, I get it, that's what I do as well. But God sees past that, and his response, and this is so important, his response isn't judgment, it isn't condemnation, it's grace. Now, another thing is this, that the mess in your life and the mess in the world, this is extraordinary. The mess is a lens through which we discover God. God reveals himself in the context of mess. That if you're able to recognize mess, honestly, you are just a baby step away from recognizing the presence and the grace of God. Let me explain. What I want to do is I want to go to some verses in a letter written by a man called Paul. Paul has an intellect and an understanding that is a million times greater than mine. Okay, I just want to kind of reassure you on that. And he explains it, but he explains it, and as you read through it, think, what I'll try and do is unpick a little bit of what he's saying. He's writing to a group of Christians who live in Rome, and this is how he puts it. He says this, we know that everything in the law was written for those who are under its power. So in other words, there is a law that we kind of have to abide by or live by. So if you drive a car, you come under the law of the highway code, because that law, the law of the road, is over you. If you get stopped and you've been driving really, really quickly, and the police stop you, and they pull you over, and you say, well, thanks very much, but I don't like that law. I'm not prepared to come under that law. Okay, it will make no difference to the result that will happen, because you are under the law, because you are driving in the UK under certain rules. You can come up with excuses. Now, from first-hand experience, when I was younger, I tried to make excuses for why I needed to drive so fast. I got nowhere. Literally, when they took my license away for 6 months, which was a very embarrassing time, they showed no grace. So in other words, there is something higher than what I think and even how I behave. There is a standard by which we are called to live by. And when Paul says this, that we know that everything in the law, when he talks about the law there, he's really talking about the law of God. And that can be understood in different ways by people. If you were Jewish, you would say it's under the Old Testament laws. There were 662 of them, and they would memorize them, and they would know whether they would break the law. Honestly, it was so structured around the law. If you're a Christian, if you're a follower of Jesus, then we live by the law of Christ or the law of Jesus. And the law of Jesus is to love and to treat people in the way that God loves and treats you. Remember that new command I give to you to love one another as I have loved you. I want you to love one another. That's the law under which it's how we treat people, how we love other people. But if you're not someone who would have a faith, or you're still exploring, you know, you could just replace that word or include within that law the law of your conscience. Because there are some things, we can't get away from it, there are some things that our conscience tells us that we should and that we shouldn't do. We're under the law of our conscience. We feel accountable to it. And another thing that we all have in common is that we all fall short of whatever standard that we live by. Whether it's the law of Christ, whether it's the law of the Old Testament, whether it's the law of our conscience, we keep messing up. And when we're caught, it's always great to hear excuses of why someone has been caught. If you go to a primary school, you'll hear all kinds of answers of why they've done certain things, you know. But as adults too, if we ever get caught for doing something wrong, there are all kinds of justifications that take place in our heads. And one of those justifications is this: well, I tried really hard, and I normally I do it, but I just didn't do it this time. I'm really sorry. Hey, nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. And when we say, or when we think something like that, nobody's perfect, we're acknowledging something huge. We are acknowledging something so big that is often missed. Because what we are saying is there is a perfect that nobody is. That's what we're doing, aren't we? We're saying nobody's perfect. We're saying there is a standard, there is a perfection that nobody is reaching up to. There's a morality, there's an ethic, there's a law that you know exists, but you keep falling short of it. So Paul goes on in his letter, and he says this: the law says that these things, or says these things, to stop anyone from making excuses. So in other words, it's not that we should justify the wrong things that we do, although we can often be good at that, or stop pointing the finger at other people. And he says, to stop making excuses and to let God show that the whole world is guilty. Now you might think, blimey, this is the first Sunday of the, this is really gloomy. This is not gloomy, okay? You have to be a little bit gloomy to then jump up, okay? The good news is that the point of this struggle, that sense of guilt, isn't to make us feel bad and to give up, nor is it to make us to try harder to become more perfecter or to become perfect people. It's to show that we need God and that God is near. God goes on to say this: God doesn't accept people simply because they obey the law. If you're trying to be good to be accepted by God, we're never going to hit that standard. We're just not, because you've already failed in the past, so we haven't reached it. We haven't lived this life of perfection. So God doesn't accept people simply because they obey the law. So it's not about whether you're good or bad. So if you're sitting here thinking, I'm rubbish, that's fine. Honestly, that is fine. That is not a thing to put a barrier against God. No, indeed. All the law does is to point out our sin. So when I read the New Testament, I'm reminded of the law of Christ, of how I am to love others, how I am to forgive others, how I'm to invest in others, how I'm to step in and to support others. And when I read that, I just know I keep falling short, because it shows me how far short I fall. It's like a mirror and a reminder that there is a perfect, but nobody hits it, including me. And then 3 verses later, Paul just sums it up really simply. I had to learn this when I was about 5 years old. Such a positive verse. All of us have sinned, okay? The nice Bible verse, a Bible name there, kind of for that mess. All of us have sinned and fallen short of God's glory. The reason that we recognize a mess when we see one is because every mess has a reference point. It does. Every mess has a reference point. The reference point for the mess that we create is called unmess. So in other words, we know what a marriage, a really strong, good marriage should look like. We know how we should behave. We know how we should handle our finances. We know we should escape that habit or that addiction that we have. And Paul is making this point, and he's saying this, that awareness of our messes awaken us to something outside of us to which we're accountable. Becoming aware that I can't keep my own standards as I nibble away at more chocolates in the evening and I'm saying I want to lose weight. If I can't keep my own standards, let alone God's standards and God's expectations, it usually leads us to try harder and harder and get frustrated because we can't make it. And Paul says, no, God didn't give us the law to make us try harder or to ding our conscience to become a better person. God speaks through our conscience. God reminds us so that we become aware that there is something or someone outside of you and me to whom we're accountable. Which is why Paul goes on to say this, and this is amazing. But God treats us much better than we deserve. The one that we are accountable to, God himself, isn't the judge. And listen carefully to this. For those of you who have made a mess in various ways, you have to hear this. God is not a God who is a judge, who points the finger, who shakes his head in disbelief at our mess and criticizes us. He's the God of mercy and he's the God of grace. I remember mercy being described as this, not getting what we do deserve, and grace being getting what I don't deserve. So this is grace, but God treats us much better than we deserve. And because of Christ Jesus, he freely accepts us and sets us free from our sin. So today, on the first Sunday of January, there is an invitation from the one who is over us, who is above us, who is beyond us, God himself. And the invitation is to be accepted into his family, to be loved by him, to be forgiven for the mess that we've made in our own lives, which often then draws in other people to that mess as well. And how can God do that? Because of Christ Jesus. So it's got nothing to do with how good or how bad you are, and it's got everything to do with who Jesus is and what he has done for us. We during the carol service or the Christmas service, we just used the verses from the angels bringing the message to the shepherds, who said that a rescuer has been born to us today in the city of David. He is Christ the Lord. Why did Jesus come? It's to deal and address the mess that we make in our lives. We're in a hole too big to climb out of ourselves. It's why we need Jesus. It's all to do with recognizing God in the mess and accepting his grace. If there is no mess in your life and you have never done anything wrong, then why would you need God? Why would you need God? So all of us have sinned and fall short, which is why all of us, Jesus came for all of us. This is, these verses, I'm going to finish in a minute. Just have a look at these verses. That God sent Christ, that's Jesus, to be our sacrifice. Christ offered his life's blood so that by faith in him, we could come to God. And God did this to show that in the past he was right to be patient and forgive sinners. This also shows that God is right when he accepts people who have faith in Jesus. It's about trusting the one who died to take our sin, our mess, on himself so that we can go free. You want to find out more? We're running an alpha course. It's starting on Wednesday. We will explore this more. And rather than it being a monologue of me standing here and you having all kinds of questions and thinking, Bluminette, why can't I? You, what does he mean by that? It just gives a great environment to ask and talk through all of those questions. Alpha starts on Wednesday. You can come to Next Steps and you can sign up. And if you're watching online and you live locally, you are welcome to be able to join us. Just go to our website, forgechurch.com/alpha. We would love, love, love to see you. But for those of you here who have already experienced that relationship, that grace and forgiveness, I want to challenge you to do something this week. When you come across someone this week who's in a bit of a mess, okay, whether it's a drunk outside a shop or a work colleague who comes back after this weekend and starts telling stories of the destruction of their decisions that they made or how much they drank. Or if it's a family member who's making some really poor decisions. Instead of judging and instead of criticizing, I want you to say something to yourself, okay? And I want you to say this. I know a mess when I see one, because I am one. To be that reminder that every time I judge someone else, I'm opening myself up to be judged by others. Because unless you're perfect, there's still a bit of a mess in you and in me. And that will remind us to be less critical, to be more open. And maybe we can even start to ask some backstory of people, which will build a love and a compassion for people in ways beyond what we can ever imagine. So, if you're still searching and wondering what this God thing is about, come to Alpha, come and talk to me afterwards. I'd love to pray. If you would want to say today, I want to receive Jesus. I want to know what it is to have to be forgiven for the mess in my life. I would love to pray with you. I would. It would make my day. It would make my year. But if you're not ready for that, then come to Alpha. But if you are already a follower of Jesus and there's still that mess, let's not judge others. But let's just say, I know a mess when I see one because I am one. Let me pray. God, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for that word grace, which says that we get treated much better than we ever deserve. Lord, thank you that we can sing the songs as we were doing earlier and what we're going to do now about you, and we can do it with confidence because it's not down to how good or how bad we are or how big a mess we're in. But because of what Jesus has done, we can know forgiveness. We can know a power within to help us to make wiser choices going forward. But knowing that we can be part of your family, loved and accepted by you. Thank you for grace. Thank you for Jesus. Thank you for the hope that you can bring in our mess. In Jesus' name, amen.